shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. What a week, what a month it's been in British politics. I think we can agree we've been comprehensively betrayed. I can't believe that Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn are getting into bed together. What a complete and utter mess. Last week we had the Brexit demonstration, of course, marched through London, and also the launch of, I guess now, of Nigel Farage's Brexit Party. And one man is back in town, back from Washington, D.C. for a while. It's Raheem Kassam. He's the global editor-in-chief now of humanevents.com. And by God, will he be shooting from the lip as we introduce him now.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Raheem.
Good afternoon, John.
Incredible events. May and Corbyn in bed. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, May is definitely not bae, I'll tell you that much. she is very, very unpopular at the moment and desperately clinging to power. And so what she's done is kind of a genius move from her perspective. I spoke at an event for the Bow Group last week, which was actually supposed to take place in a parliamentary committee room. But believe it or not, John, they kicked us out when they heard, and I quote, a known Islamophobe like Raheem Kassam was going to be speaking. So we did it down the road at a hotel instead. But it was massively well attended. And I said two things in that event. And there were Conservative Party headquarters people in that room. And here's what I said. I said, May has two major problems, and I have no idea how she gets around them. Number one is the prospect of European elections if we stay in beyond the April, leaving date, which was supposed to be April the 12th.
Yeah.
And number two, she's got the problem that she does not command the respect of her parliamentary party. She does not command the respect of the House of Commons. She does not command the respect of the country, and therefore her position would be untenable in the medium term, which would inevitably lead to a general election. And at a general election, as we've seen from the polls this weekend, it looked like Jeremy Corbyn would quite easily win a general election over her, if she was the person leading the Conservative Party into the next general election, that is. And so she did something genius, and I've no doubt she didn't come up with it because she is not a genius. It looks like the work of Oliver Letwin, you know, the architect of the poll tax and the architect of David Cameron's 2010 manifesto is back again. And this time is the architect of the death of Brexit, it looks like. And he came up with this strategy. Number one, you extend, this is what she announced last night, you extend the process until May the 22nd, but you do not allow the country to fight European elections. So she therefore takes the threat of UKIP or Nigel Farage's Brexit Party or whomever else off the table, because of European parliamentary elections in this country would effectively be a people's vote. It would effectively be a second referendum. We would be able to gauge the will of the British public over Brexit just by seeing who dominated those elections. And number two, she's invited Jeremy Corbyn in to see her at Downing Street in very short order after the announcement. And she said this, and I think it really behooves understanding the words she used as precise words. She said, now is a time for national unity in the national interest. And what that suggests to politicos like me who have heard those words thrown about before is that she is willing, perhaps, to trade cabinet positions, ministerial positions, junior ministerial positions, or maybe even policy positions in exchange for Labour Party votes for her withdrawal agreement.
So a national government of unity is what you're saying, is it? Or a new form of coalition? You think it's going to go that far?
I think she's laying the groundwork for it right now. I think she's very ready for Corbyn to walk into a meeting and say, well, why should I? And actually, if you're Theresa May, what's the only answer you could give someone like Jeremy Corbyn is, well, OK, well, maybe we'll introduce some of your manifesto as our primary legislation. Maybe you can have a seat at the table, the Brexit negotiating table. Maybe you get a ministerial position. And it may be a soft national unity government. But if Corbyn accepts, and he would be foolish to, then it would be a national unity government.
But he wants, and I thought it was policy now, a people's vote, their second referendum. And she's not going to give him that, is she?
Well, see, I don't think Jeremy Corbyn himself actually does people's vote or a second referendum. So this will come down to an appeal between egos. And if she manages to stroke his ego enough, then he may well end up taking it. It would be a very short-term solution for someone like Corbyn, because actually, if he were to force a no-confidence vote against her in the House of Commons in totality, he may well be able to whip the votes, especially now with the ERG split, the European Research Group split. He may be able to get the votes in order to bring down the government and win a general election. So, you know, I if I were him, I wouldn't do it, but he's a moron, so he probably will.
So what does it mean to me and you and ordinary people? I mean, is it going to end up in a general election? Is she going to get this through, or are we going to see the back of her?
Well, the best and the worst case scenario out of this, again, this is why this move is so genius from her, because the best and the worst eventualities are both the same thing. The worst case scenario is that we get her withdrawal agreement. The best case scenario is that we get her withdrawal agreement. There's no wiggle room here for anything else. There's no deal now. Parliament has shown itself completely unable to get behind any other motions that have been introduced. And so now we're seeing a fight between, well, what's an ostensible fight, a fake fight, it's a pantomime fight between the executive and the legislative. But they're not really fighting, because, as we know, they're effectively one and the same in this country. We don't have that massive separation between those two branches of government. So it's a fake fight, and it's aimed at keeping people like us confused and unsure of what to do next.
So you don't see her going anytime soon then, unless Corbyn kicks off?
Well, if Corbyn kicks off, if Corbyn says, you know, at the end of today, I've had meetings with the Prime Minister, they weren't successful, we don't see a way forward, I've urged her to go, well, then she could potentially go. And again, as I understand it, the conservative Eurosceptics, the real Eurosceptics, the half of the ERG who didn't cave on May's deal last week, are also willing to talk to the Labour Party, as long as talking to the Labour Party means that they get enough votes in a House of Commons no confidence motion to get rid of Theresa May.
And do you think any ministers are going to walk? There's evidently 14 of them were against this.
Yeah, I think we already saw the Wales minister, I believe, this morning, Nigel Adams, who resigned and said, you know, working with a Marxist is not what this government stood on in its manifesto, not what this country needs, and therefore resign. I sense that there may well be another one or two, but again, I think people are waiting to see what deal she does with Corbyn. If she manages to get one over on him, then the Conservative Party tends to rally behind its own self-interest and say, well, this is great because she's neutralized Corbyn for a while, we don't have to worry about an election, blah, blah, blah. But if she actually gives him something of substance, or even if it's perceived to be substantial, then she'll have another full-on revolt within her own parliamentary party.
But no matter what, we have been betrayed, haven't we? The 17.4 million of us who voted for Brexit, we are being betrayed.
Maybe somebody else smarter than me can see a way through this, but I don't see a way right now how Brexit can mean Brexit. I just don't. And my job, a lot of my job is forecasting, and a lot of my job is trying to plan these moments through. And up until yesterday afternoon, there were still many things on the table. Effectively, she's now ruled out in totality the no deal scenario, because even after May the 22nd, if nothing is done, she's not going to allow us to leave under a no-deal circumstance.
And that's what the people want, isn't it, Raheem? Isn't that what the people want?
Well, it is. I mean, a recent Comres poll, I think it was, found that 64% of Britons now prefer a WTO rules no-deal Brexit. And also, they've owned the narrative on that. You know, it's not a no-deal Brexit, is it? It's a Brexit that goes back to WTO trading rules, which is a deal in and of itself. Let's not forget, the WTO rules were thrashed out through deals back when they were made. So it's not a no-deal Brexit. It just happens to be going to a position that other nations, many, many other nations, deal on with each other on a daily basis. But yeah, I mean, it's a total betrayal. And without the European parliamentary elections as a way by which to whip conservative votes towards real Brexiteers and a real Brexit party, there's actually no mechanism. There are a few mechanisms, I should say, by which people can take the Conservative Party to task. Now, there is one big one left on the table that the party doesn't know how to deal with. And that's the deselection process and the no confidence processes that are taking place in constituencies up and down the country.
Like we saw Dominic Grieve.
Exactly. And now, while not binding, what it does, what local Conservative associations are now saying, and I've spoken to many Conservative Association chairmen over the past couple of weeks, what they're saying is that they're not going to campaign for the Conservative Party. They're not going to leaflet. They're not going to man street stalls. They're not going to pay their membership dues. They're just going to come to a grinding halt. It's effectively a strike in the Conservative Party. And once you have that strike within the Conservative Party effectively ceases to exist.
So what about a situation with the EU elections? You don't think that's going to happen?
I mean, she's ruled it out, so I'm not sure. You know, for those things to happen, the Electoral Commission needs time, there needs to be planning, there needs to be ballot papers printed, there needs to be polling stations assigned. And what she's doing is she's trying to run out the clock to the point where it'll be impossible for us to participate in those elections.
How is she getting away with this?
Because there's nothing else, there's no other mechanism. You know, it's not like we have a Second Amendment and, you know, we can take arm to the streets. We don't have another strong party in the country that is calling for Brexit to mean Brexit. The Conservative Parliamentary Party shot its load too early with its own failed no-confidence motion in her. And again, as I say, there's no real mechanism, barring an intervention from the palace, for instance, that can remove her. And you could talk to a constitutional, you know, a far more enlightened constitutional thinker than I on this. I think they'd come to the same conclusions.
And so where does that leave her as Prime Minister? When will she go and who will replace her? The polls are now saying that Boris is the man. I mean, is that an irrelevant discussion at the moment?
I think we have to be ready for her to chicken out and run away, just like David Cameron did. You know, these people are cut from the same cloth. Boris Johnson would seem to me like a pretty poor choice amongst the Conservative Parliamentary Party for Prime Minister. He's not very well respected abroad. He's not very well respected at home. He may well be liked within the Conservative Party and by Conservative members, but that doesn't a good Prime Minister make. The names I'm hearing from within my sources in the Conservative Party are more like Sajid Javid, Priti Patel. Some people even talking about John Redwood making a comeback, although he probably lacks the charisma to carry that through. And then the other person, of course, mooted is Michael Gove. And all of those people, I think, would be better than Boris Johnson, because as you remember, Boris is so flaky that he was the guy that wrote two letters, one urging people to remain and one urging people to leave. He was so unsure of his own position. So I don't think we could trust him with Brexit either.
What about you personally? Okay, you're living in the States most of the time, but do you feel personally betrayed? And all that hard work you put in as sort of the right-hand man to Nigel Farage and that glorious Independence Day, how do you look back on that now?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's impossible to not feel betrayed by it. And I still, you know, while living or working in a different country, I still focus most of my time and most of my attention on this stuff and what's going on with this stuff, because, you know, it's probably going to have been by the end of my life the thing that's taken most of my life up. But even the constitutional experts I speak to, you know, Nigel Farage, whether you want to go that way, the political way, the media side, speaking to all the journalists in Westminster, none of those people in all of their different with all the different hats can figure out where we're going. And I'll tell you exactly why that is now.
Yeah, go on.
You know, democracy has been ruled unwanted and ineffective in this country since the Brexit vote. The political establishment have decided that democracy isn't for Britain anymore, and that bureaucracy and the administrative state knows better what's best for the nation. Now, we all know from both philosophical, moral, and applicational perspectives that none of those things are true. But again, there's no way to wrest the control back. Now, I think there's a serious point to be made here, and I'll try not to be hyperbolic with it. But if she's saying that democracy no longer matters, whether it's the Brexit vote, whether it's a people's vote, or whether it's a European parliamentary elections vote, then what she is also saying is that we now live in a dictatorship. It may not be a dictatorship where all the power rests in one person's hands, but it's certainly a dictatorship where all the power rests in a very small group's hands. And I'm afraid whether we come to realize this now or come to realize it in 10 years' time, That's the state of modern Britain.
OK, that's Raheem Kassam. He has wasted no time in shooting from the lip. We've got more to talk about. We're going to talk about Jeremy Corbyn being used for target practice. We're going to talk about the Brexit march and Jon Snow. We're going to talk about Nigel Farage's new Brexit party. Will it actually really launch? That's all coming up on the Jon Gaunt Show here. Shooting from the lip on Sputnik International. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
Jon Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
OK, you're back with Jon Gaunt. It's Shooting from the Lip. It's Sputnik International. My special guest, Raheem Kassam, just illustrating before the break that we may be now living in a dictatorship. I agree with a lot of what you've said there, Raheem. So what was the point of the demo last week? Was that just a busted flush by the time it happened?
No, at the time it happened, you know, there were still mechanisms on the table. At the time it happened, we were still looking for an April the 12th no deal date. At the time it happened, we were still looking at the potential of European parliamentary election. She's now in one fell swoop. And I think yesterday will go down in history, although at the time we probably didn't realize it. But in one fell swoop, the Prime Minister effectively said, you do not have the right to tell me what to do, and you do not have the right to expect anything out of your government. That is a major, major moment in not just modern, but in the totality of British history. We've never had a situation so bad in modern history where the Prime Minister would stand up at a lectern and say, the interest of the political establishment, we are going to try and unify somehow the Labour and the Conservative parties to thwart the will of the people. Now, that makes the entire political establishment, that sets them out per their laws and their rules as the enemies of the people. That's not me saying it, that's them doing it. So I think the big rally was very successful in calling attention to what we wanted and in calling attention to the fact that Brexiteers haven't gone away, because, you know, that's the other narrative that the left tries to push. It. There's this all this regret and, you know, our marches are massive and you can't get people out and so on and so forth. So I think it was a show of force in that regard. But from a strategic perspective, I don't think we've ever had it so bad.
Was it a stitch up from the beginning? I mean, a lot of people seem to think this has all been a charade, a pantomime. Do you think ever since that day, was it the 23rd in 2016, they were beavering away at this?
No, actually, I mean, I don't think they presumed to know anything about how they would go about Brexit. I don't think they went into the referendum thinking that we could actually win, that Leave could win. And so they hadn't made any plans to either thwart a loss for their side or to implement Brexit if we won. And I think they've just happened upon these positions. And the reason I think that, is because the Prime Minister hasn't managed to have that many stalwart figures around her to help her thwart this stuff. It's really just Oliver Letwin who's come around in the last week or so, who's managed to put this platform together of how to get around what the public wants. So I think she's sort of just been muddling her way through this. But unfortunately, our side doesn't have we'll come to talk about this when we talk about the Brexit Party in a moment.
Sure.
But our side doesn't have the unity, and we certainly don't have the strength in depth that we can put, you know, 50 different people on TV all singing from the same hymn sheet. We can't put 50 constitutional experts in the press. We just don't have that on our side, and that's where we're falling down.
But would you actually get on the press? I mean, what do you think of the MSM's role in this, especially the broadcasters? I think they've been blatantly biased towards the Remain.
Yeah, and, you know, we factor that in at all points. But as you know, while the mainstream media is more than willing to try and malign us and ignore us in a lot of ways, they're also very glass-jawed. So if you go at them, they back down very quickly. I mean, I can give an example. If I were to walk right now into 4 Milbank and ring on the BBC's doorbell and ring on Sky News' doorbell and say, right, I'm here to talk about Brexit, put me on, and I just stay there and get in their face, I do believe that some producer would come and go, all right, yeah, we've got a slot in about 20 minutes if you want to come and do this. The problem is our side doesn't quite realize just how weak these media types are. I mean, they're basically just skinny jeans wearing hipsters who don't know how to say no to people. And we could take advantage of that if we only had the numbers.
Okay. What did you make of Jon Snow's comments about how many white people were on your march and on your protest?
Well, I thought it was wonderful. because it really highlighted the racism that's aimed at white people nowadays, which, you know, we all know there is much of it, but there's rarely ever been such a clear-cut case where somebody, a news anchor, is saying it live on television. And so it really helped to underscore our points in that regard. What it also did was show the malice with which the political establishment treats Brexiteers. As I say, it's one of our biggest rallies, one of our biggest marches ever. And by the way, it wasn't just white people. We all know it wasn't just white people.
Not.
And also, it wouldn't matter if it was only just white people, right? But here's the thing. You know, you'll remember the Battle of the Thames when Bob Geldof and Nigel Farage sailed opposing flotillas down the Thames. And what did Geldof do is he stuck two fingers up, or a finger up, I forget which one it was, at these ordinary working class fishermen who had sailed for 2 days to take part in a protest about their livelihoods, our common fisheries policy that we have with the European Union. And Jon Snow had a Geldof moment the other day, and he gave us something else to rally around, which is their hatred for us. So I was very pleased that Jon Snow did it. What I think it says about Channel 4 and Jon Snow, that he's still got a job, is that they're not even, it's not even a deep state anymore, right? It's an in-your-face state, and they don't even care.
And they've effectively taken over and they're ignoring the will of the people. OK, let's go on then. So why are those who wanted Brexit, or those on the right, not getting together? Why haven't they got these figureheads? And is the Brexit Party actually going to happen?
Well, so the easy answer to why these people all can't get together, whether it's Anne-Marie Waters and her For Britain party, whether it's Gerard Batten and UKIP, whether it's Nigel Farage and the Brexit party, the simple answer is egos, right? The simple answer is that they don't have the ability to put their own spats with each other aside and come together in the national interest. The more complicated answer is that there have been mechanisms by which over the last 10, 15 years that UKIP has come to win elections and that the Brexit party has had to come about. And those are spats between Neil Hamilton, constitutional changes within the party, all of that kind of stuff. And those things have left very bad taste in some people's mouths. And so the talent will never come back to the table as a result of those things that had to happen, by the way, for us to even have got that Brexit referendum in the first place.
So you're not going to see the Brexit party joining with UKIP or Anne-Marie's party, but let's go back to the Brexit party. Are they going to launch properly, and are they going to start putting candidates up?
Yeah, well, the Brexit Party, as I understand it, and this is a little bit of a scoop for you here, because I've been talking to Brexit Party figures for the last couple of days at length, and they've never told me they were off the record, so...
Go on, get it out, yeah.
They have a lot of money that's been pledged. I mean, a lot of money that's been pledged for fighting elections. It's an expensive process. They have hundreds of thousands of subscribers online who are donating. I've heard testimony of the bank accounts themselves just constantly, £200, £200, £200, £200, by the second going up and up and up. They've had pledges from wealthy individuals who are willing to back the party in big numbers. And I also happen to know that there is now a party infrastructure in place to the point where they're vetting 12,000 possible candidates. Remember, they need 90 for if there are going to be European parliamentary elections, and they'll need tens of thousands if they're fighting local and county and all this around the country as well. So they're in a position now where they're vetting 12,000 candidates, which is no small task. You know, everybody needs to be financially checked, you know, social media needs to be checked, all of that stuff. So I believe that it's a real thing. I would tell you if I didn't, because I get my own frustrations when people set up Potemkin village organizations and just try and rake in some cash. But I happen to believe that this is a real thing.
Are you going to be part of it?
I don't think I will be a part of it. I think I have a bit too much of a penchant for calling people the C word on Twitter to be part of a political party that is looking to establish instant credibility. And it's doing a good job of it. I mean, the Comres poll that came out just this week showed that the Brexit Party is actually polling on 5% now. And remember, it's brand new. And UKIP is polling on 4%. So, you know, you can see that it's already making waves. And I don't want to necessarily have that torn down simply because of my tweets.
So are UKIP finished?
It's a hard question. It's finished as well, insofar as leadership is concerned. There is going to be, I think, a new UKIP leadership election this coming year. I think that's what Gerard Batten pledged when he first took over anyway.
But I just don't see how now UKIP, which cannot get in the press for all it does, cannot get its message out on social media, is not picking up many members, is not raising a lot of cash. I just don't see why we would tie ourselves to that brand anymore. Look, I'm still a UKIP member, and I'll reserve judgment until I need to make, you know, the judgment call. But as it stands at the moment, I'm fundamentally unimpressed. And you know, I like Gerard Batten personally. I like him on policy. I like his presentation of things. But I think strategically, he's been an absolute nightmare.
OK, what do you think about the situation that they're saying politics is broken? Do you actually think we would move to a different electoral system that would help parties like the Brexit Party or UKIP, i.e. some form of PR? Because two parties don't seem to be working at the moment.
Well, that's what... And this is my fear about the Brexit Party, is that it is, obviously by its name, a single-issue party. But if I were in charge of the Brexit Party, I would be banging on about proportional representation right now. Because not only would you end up getting support from people on the left who know that PR would be a much fairer system, but you'd also end up getting support from a lot of these think tanks out there, a lot of these sort of left liberal organizations that have been talking about that for a very long time. And that just lends another air of legitimacy to the party.
Now, before we lose you, let's just quickly talk about Trump. You're in America, most of the time in the USA or in DC. What's your view? What's their view? What's Trump's view on Brexit? Doesn't he just want to get it over and done with as well?
Well, I get asked this maybe 6-7 times a day by American media people, by politicos, and indeed by members of the White House and the administration. They say, Raheem, and it's the words I hate most, what's going on with Brexit? Nobody wants to answer that question or have a conversation about that anymore because we're so humiliated and embarrassed by what our government's done on our behalf. But yes, the answer to the question is the Americans are dying for Brexit to happen because they are dying to do a trade deal with us. Now, that trade deal would probably mean quite little to them in financial terms in comparison to the size of their economy. But Trump needs to take every benefit he can get ahead of the next elections, both to show that he's a figure on the international stage and because there are warning signs over the economy in the United States at the moment. And for us, the financial benefits of a free trade deal with the United States would be absolutely massive. So it's almost like there is a level of treason going on here against the British economy by the political establishment who want to keep us tied to the EU.
All right. And the big story, which I definitely want you to comment on, soldiers or people have been using Jeremy Corbyn for target practice. What do you make of that?
Yeah, brilliant. Keep doing it. Our soldiers go off to defend certain principles. They're not just there because we ask them to be there. They're there because they believe in fighting for their country and what their country stands for. And one of the things that their country doesn't stand for, what their country stands opposite, is Marxism. And Jeremy Corbyn is a Marxist. So it makes perfect sense that people who want to fight for the country and fight for Western civilization would want to fight against Jeremy Corbyn. And I'll tell you what, it would have shaken him to his core because he probably knows that deep down, most people in the army actually hate him. And how could he command the respect of the armed forces as prime minister? I don't think he could.
And finally, just in a kind of sentence or two, optimistic, pessimistic about your home country? What do you think?
Oh, I'm incredibly pessimistic, and I'm usually somebody with a lot of optimism. But just being here now, I've been here just for a bit over a week, and I've been running around all different parts of town, talking to all different sorts of people. There's no way through this, and I don't mean this in a violent way, but there is no way through this unless you get a full replacement of this government structure. You know, there has to be some kind of major political revolution in this country for that to happen. And whether that's changing the voting system, whether that's imploring the Queen to get involved in this, there's got to be a major flashpoint here. And I just don't see where one's going to come from, at least overnight.
That's Raheem Kassam, Global Editor-in-Chief of humanevents.com. If you've got views on that, let us know. I'll be back next week with another guest who will shoot from the lip here on Sputnik International. But thanks very much indeed for listening today, and thanks to Raheem Kassam.
Shooting from the lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.